I would like to share a poem. And in this poem, there's a bit of language that sits a little bit difficult with me, in that it's a bit should, must. And so if we just replace that with could and may, but otherwise great poem, yeah. It's by Wendell Berry, who's quite the ecologist. We have lived by the assumption that what was good for us would be good for the world. We have been wrong. We must change our lives so that it will be possible to live by the contrary assumption, that what is good for the world will be good for us. We must recover the sense of the majesty of the creation and the ability to be worshipful in its presence. For it is only on the condition of humility and reverence before the world that our species will be able to remain in it. Reverence, to be reverent, to be prayerful towards, to celebrate in that way of, like the good reverend, you know? Like to be in wonder, to be in awe, to be, like us, no? Walking through this incredible landscape, no? We're in reverence, or I have been all day in reverence of this landscape, and there's no people. Just, wow, how amazing. How amazing, there's just us here. There's no buildings, there's no fanatical cement mixing people. We escaped them. What I really loved was when we first started this retreat and we did the go around and people shared a little bit why they were coming, and what they shared was actually the themes that I wanted to talk about on this retreat. So that always touches me, the synchronicity. We don't know each other. Most of us have never met. And yet, you know, those themes have come of getting in touch with ourselves, getting in touch with nature. And then a few people were talking about, and in touch with other people, connection with others. And those were exactly the themes that, I mean, maybe obviously, hey, for this kind of retreat. But yeah, it felt very sweet. And this this action of, like we did today, of we slopped and slipped and through marshes, we climbed through forests, we climbed up hills, we climbed through sand, we crossed rivers. All of this is very, very therapeutic, actually. It's like we almost don't need to be working on anything. We can let go into the just grabbing that branch. Our mind and our heart and body is taken with that, the action of coming through this landscape. And this is so therapeutic for us. For what I was speaking about before, of lightening our load, lightening our excess knots here and here in our body, even if we feel a bit of body pain at the end of the day, you know, in a few days, all of the knots will be undone. And I know this in particular because I met a therapist in South Africa who did this with to help child soldiers. So he did wilderness retreats, and he took like children soldiers who had been from the same village and they'd been fighting against each other. And I don't know if you heard of the peace and reconciliation that happened in South Africa to try to have forgiveness for each other and all of this. Very strong movement by Desmond Tutu. And so this man would take people on these walks, these kids on these walks, these camps in wilderness. And he said that it was amazing, just the fact that they walked as a group together, they climbed mountains, they crossed rivers, they went through forests, they dug holes for the toilet, they cooked food, and they came back together. When they did these camps, they came together. They could give up their warring. And I was thinking today as well, because we did some quite wild bits through the jungle, no? And I come from Africa, and in Zambia, where I come from, you say bundu bashing. And bundu is the bush, when you go bashing through the bush. And so this bundu bashing, the fact that there was really no paths in a lot of places, I found incredibly wonderful. And all the times that we weren't sure if that was the right direction, I thought that was so cool. We didn't know where we were going some of the time. Thank you, Anna. Thank you. It was wonderful. And I know in the Aboriginal tradition, I've lived in Australia for some years, and in the Aboriginal tradition, they're very connected with the landscape. And people are given a name and a song that goes with the landscape around them. And when they walk in the landscape of where they're born, they sing their song. They sing the song of their landscape. And I heard of this guy, and he was taking somebody who was writing a book or something, an Aboriginal man, and they were driving in the Land Rover, and suddenly he started singing, but really quickly. Because normally you're walking when you sing the song, but because the Land Rover was driving quickly, he had to sing his song very quickly. And the guy who was driving was like, "What's going on? Why are you singing like this?" And then he explained, you know, "I'm singing my landscape song." And what I've been finding, and you're used to it, but it is so soft. This environment has been so welcoming to us. Like today, I was walking through the forest. I was without shoes, and I didn't once get a thorn in my foot, nothing. There was only softness. This spongy, mossy, heathery, and a little bit that funny kind of mud with the heather. Everything felt like it was receiving us with a lot of kindness and softness. And that this has felt really soothing. Really soothing for my heart, at least, for my mind. I hope so for you too. Just this coming down out of the alarm system, coming out of the kind of hyperactivity of our probably speedier lifestyles that most of us have, no? Like the landscape has been caressing us so gently. And where I live in the south of France, it's much drier. And I live on a hill. Well, there's many hills with oak forests, but everything's very stony and prickly. So there's big thorny bushes and there's little thorny bushes. Everywhere it's thorny and prickly. And even the sharpest ones have their moment in the springtime when they have these beautiful yellow flowers for 2 weeks, and then you're going, okay. So for 2 weeks, you're really beautiful. The rest of the time, you get me. And in this way, nature is not making any concessions for us. Hey, nature just is. And so, like, we can be in one place and it's so soft and so caressing for us to be here in Lapland. And you could be in the south of France, and it's much drier, and the streams don't have water in the summer, and the grass is yellow. It's also safe here. Like, I've been trekking in Africa, where the guides, they have guns, you know? And this, I remember this, and we're walking with our bags and that in the African heat. And what really stays with me from that journey is, like, one of the guides was explaining the poo, and he was like, this big pile, this is elephant poo. Because an elephant is vegetarian, you know, and eats 300 kilos of vegetation every day. This is elephant poo, you know. And then leaving camp the next morning, I'd heard the sound of something being killed in the night. I'm cutting this story short because otherwise I'll lose track. But the guide said, just outside the camp, this is lion poo. And it's pure protein because lions only eat meat, which means me too. You know, I can be supper for the lion. And so walking through these kinds of places in nature can be very alarming even and keep us very, very alert indeed. So what has been touching me here is the beauty of how simple it is. And I've had quite a difficult year. I've had a lot of trouble in my life this year. And so sometimes I felt that beauty is a bit far away. I haven't been able to see and feel beauty in a usual way because I've been dealing with difficulty. So in my heart, I normally have, I think I often have a connection that's quite easy. But this year it's felt difficult to connect. But I'm really finding that interconnection with the beauty here is touching the receptors in my heart that recognize. So the beauty that's in here is meeting the beauty outside. And I feel, I don't know, this is not at all scientifically proven. I feel that that we can only really see beauty when we have some beauty here to meet. In the last 200 years or something, the human beings have had a very strange attitude to nature, of wanting to measure everything, to put Latin names, to somehow control it and see what we can get from it, you know, what we can produce and then sell somewhere and export to New York, here, there, yeah. And here there's just all these berries. Hey, all day long we've been eating berries. And I'm delighted that there's a kind of, it feels to me like there's a soft revolution happening in that, you know, we had this before 200 years ago, we had all this very strong belief systems, very strong people's lives were dominated by quite strict religion and stuff and belief that something was going to strike us down if we did something wrong. And then suddenly it was like, okay, now let's prove everything scientifically and let's measure everything. And so all the colonialists who went on expeditions, you know, they always had lots of measuring tapes. Biologists and Dr. Livingstone's. And for me, what feels like the softer revolution is that people are turning now more quietly and not, obviously not the whole lot, are turning towards trying to connect again with nature in a way that's not trying to just take, what can I get, you know, in a not greedy way, in a way of interchange. And that kind of quiet revolution is very different to the revolution. You know, I come from France where people like to protest a lot. And that's great. But that's not all there is to just disagree all the time and shout and burn things in the street. This quieter revolution, I feel, has a lot of strength and potential. And to move away from, like, we've been downloaded with this thing, this Darwinism, whether Darwin's actually said this or not is another story, but this Darwinism of, you know, survival of the fittest, that, yeah, because in nature, you know, only the fittest survive. And the people who said that, the scientists, that's what they wanted to believe. So they made all of the research fit that belief. But it's not true. There is compassion in nature too. There is a lot of collaboration between species, in the same species. So we can also learn so much from this turning away from our conditioning, our education that has told us this Darwin theory, supposedly, survival of only the fittest, you know. We can turn the conditioning, our programming, towards an opening to something else with nature, being something that can hold, that we can revere, that we can celebrate and be in reverence of. This nature that is, we are also this nature. We are also nature. We have what is out here. As we were doing with Francis in the exercises earlier, with the fluids in the body, you know, we have liquids in us. We have solidness in us. We have air in us. We have warmth in us. So we have the same elements as are out in nature, in us. This is what we share. This is what we share between us as well, as human beings. We share. We all have water in us. And then as we get old, we get drier. And then when you see a dead person, they're really dry, you know. But this is one thing that we share. We share water, liquid element. And the feeling that comes from this sharing of this element, these are shared feelings, you know. We're not dry people, we're liquid people. And we're people with bones whose bodies can hold up because we have bones. Because we have something solid, otherwise we would just be a little puddle. We have air coming in, going out, coming in, going out. Just like outside, there is oxygen. Just like the trees, breathing in, breathing out. And we have warmth. We have some furnace here, some stove, you know, that helps with the digestion, that keeps us warm. Otherwise, we would be ghosts. We'd be freezing cold, no? You give someone a cuddle and, ooh, cold. So you may think, I'm getting a bit way out here. I'm going off on a freak out or something here. But this is actually basic Buddhist classical teaching, that we are the four elements, the five elements with space. And here we are walking on the earth, on the solid earth, with our solid bodies, with so much water around us and water in the air, water inside us, with our warm blood, our heart beating, and we're breathing the air from outside. So in the end, we're not so separate from our environment, and we're not so separate from each other. What we share in our lived everyday experience as mammals is so much more than what we don't share, than our differences. It's huge what we share, our commonalities, our sensations, just because of these elements on this elemental earth. And so this feeling when we're walking of being part of a larger organism, a living organism, this earth, and us as a living organism together, where we can stop, we can help each other, we can ask for help, which is sometimes more difficult, but we can ask each other for help, we can ask for something we don't have, that we need. Has someone got something? Because I have a sore knee, you know, or I've run out of water. Could someone give me some water? In this, we can be Sangha. Sangha is the word for spiritual friends. There's also something I've been curious about the last few years, and that's an approach to change, to impermanence. Impermanence is a kind of major theme in the Buddhist teachings. The letting go of resistance to the fact that life is just changing all the time, that we can't hold on to anything, but we tend to forget that and want to hold, and then we suffer. But this thing that I've been curious about the last few years is an approach to change where we include the landscape. So instead of going, there's a change, whether we it's something we wanted or not, and I need to adapt to this change. So instead of going from the okay, I'll consider the past and then I'll work out how to deal with the change. So say something has happened, some big thing in your life has happened, like you lost your job or your partner, someone died, or some big thing that's impacted you. And you're like, okay, whoa, so I'm dealing with this turmoil, I'm dealing with change. And usually the way is, I'll consider the past and then I'll go to work out the future, considering just the past experience. But this approach is to consider the journey through change, the landscape that we're traveling through in the time of change. So this is just, it may not make sense to you like straight away, but it's something to just bear in mind as we walk through this landscape, allowing the landscape to come into us to take that into consideration in the changes that are happening in our lives, or the changes that we want, instead of coming from a fixed thing of the past to an idea of the future. So I don't really know if I should continue into the second part of my talk. Yeah. I feel like people are quite sun blasted today. Mm-hmm. Are you quite sun blasted?
We wish to hear.
Yeah. You want to hear some more?
Yeah.
Okay. The thing is, I have to remember the connection. Sometimes I have some ideas and then I forget the connection, you know. So I'll just dive in anyways, even if the connection is difficult to pick up on. It might make sense later. So in this year that has been, this past year, that has been very difficult for me, I have found myself by moments I haven't found myself by moments. I suddenly realized, actually, that I'd been sleep-waking, that I'd been awake and living my life, but I'd actually been sleeping, that I'd kind of fallen into a trap, I think, that I didn't expect myself with 20 years of spiritual practice to fall into. And that was to be, when I had pleasant experiences, I was going towards those. And when things were unpleasant, I was somehow thinking that there was something wrong, and that I had to try and work things out and fix things. And so I was pushing away the unpleasant instead of meeting it. And I was trying to get back to the pleasant, even if it was just pleasurable sensations in the body. And this is actually, part of the very foundation of these Buddhist teachings is our grasping for the pleasant and our pushing away of the unpleasant. I was just very surprised to suddenly have this. I had a few days off and I went to stay in my teacher's house, which is near the sea, and I just sat and I watched the sea for 3 days, which was a great meditation. And suddenly it just dropped in. This actual body feeling of this is what I'm doing. As soon as it's not pleasant, I'm getting this feeling, there's something wrong. I'm doing something wrong. The world's wrong. Need to fix it, you know? And this is, it's such a human tendency that this is why the Buddha was talking about it 2,600 years ago, you know? And this is why he talked about it for 45 years. Because even then, 2,600 years ago, this is what humans did. And this is what humans do now still. Hey. And then there's the added suffering of, it's not just, I don't want what's difficult. And pushing that away is in itself stressful and painful, because it's adding some suffering, but it's trying to get back to the pleasantness. This is also, it's stressful, no? As well. And so in these Buddhist teachings, they have what is called the eight worldly winds. And these are the eight winds that the humans get blown around by, these eight winds. because they're constantly trying to either get them or get rid of them. And so the the ones that we are trying to get are pleasure, getting something, having a good reputation, and receiving praise. So pleasure, trying to get something, trying to get a new telly, a new partner, a new job, whatever. Trying to get some praise, that people only say nice things to us, and to have a good reputation. And what we're trying to push away, what we're resisting, is unpleasant. Anything unpleasant. We're trying to resist loss, any form of loss. And that then ties in with how, especially, I think in Western society, when somebody dies, we're really surprised. We're devastated. But people have been dying for millions of years. It's like, it's what happens, you know? And so we've forgotten the rituals and how to deal with it. We've forgotten how to grieve. You don't know how to deal with those emotions. So that's loss. Bad reputation. We're trying to push away bad reputation when we think that people aren't thinking good of us. I have a terrible reputation for some people. So I work with this a lot, the having a bad reputation, because I'm not much of a people pleaser, you know. I just say what I need to say. I don't try to please. And so I get a bad reputation. And then I have to deal with the consequences of having a bad reputation, you know. And blame is the other one. So blame is the opposite of praise, you know, where people, instead of saying all nice things to you, they accuse and say, rah, 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 rah. And we're so knocked over by that. We're thrown into the water by these eight worldly winds. Again and again and again, we're thrown in the water. And they sneak into all parts of our lives like this, like water seeping in, that we don't realize how much energy goes into trying to get the pleasant, trying to get praise, trying to get a good reputation. How much energy goes into resisting any form of difficulty, any blame, any bad reputation, any loss. And so when I had this kind of download in the beach in Spain, when I realized that I'd fallen into this trap of the eight worldly winds, it was so visceral. It was so that I could actually feel the physical sensations of my movement over the next few days. It was very acute, feeling that, want more pleasant. Things are okay now. Oh, things are not going how I want. Things are not okay. There's something wrong, you know? And yet, what do we need? What do we need to deal with this human tendency for the eight worldly winds? So this is coming back to the lovely, soft landscape, you know, with the moss and the lovely mud and the water and the kind of non-extremeness of this environment that is so kind and caressing to us. And I've been saying to the managers, can't we just stay here and live here, you know? I don't want to go back to dry, thorny, prickly France where my life is and problems and stuff, you know? I want this, and I don't want this, you know? So here we are in the middle of nowhere, and they're still happening, you know, the eight worldly winds. I just want the soft stuff. I want the good stuff, you know? I want a life that's completely free of any difficulty. And yet there is the suffering. There is the stress, is when we're trying to make everything completely stress-free and not accept the conditions of this existence is things change. Sometimes we're in a thorny, dry, stony environment. Sometimes we're in an environment where lions can eat us. And these are also metaphors, you know, of landscapes of life. So we could be in a big city, you know, and feel like the lions are going to eat us. We can have that feeling, you know. Or that that everything's too dry and thorny and uncomfortable and too hot. So for this, we need some discernment, you know. We need some, you know, like those things on top of a building that tells you where the wind is blowing, whether the wind is coming from the north or the south, or, you know, these things? You have those here?
Tuliviri.
Mm-hmm. Is that it? A tuliviri?
Yes.
Yeah. it's a lovely word. Tuliviri. We need to have our tuliviri working well, well oiled, you know? Put some oil up there.
Yeah.
So that it works properly, so that we can discern, you know? So when the cold, icy northern winds are blowing on the tuliviri, we're just like, yeah, it's just the northern wind. We're not going, stop, you shouldn't be here. You're not allowed to exist, you know. So that we can have some balance, some discernment. So we know. And we can feel it when we're diving in and getting sucked in to an unrealistic need for everything to be okay all the time, to be pleasant, to have pleasant sensations, to eat chocolate every day, to only have mosquitoes like the mosquitoes here, because the mosquitoes here, like the mosquitoes in France, they are vicious. Like they, and they get you there, you know? The mosquitoes here, they're like on opium or something. They're like, la, 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 la. And when I bite you, I only give you a tiny bite because I'm on opium, you know? So I'm like, oh, geez, this is so relaxing, you know? I don't know why the mosquitoes are so sort of harmonious and peace-loving mosquitoes. You know? Maybe it's because of the politicians in France, you know. This is probably the problem. The mosquitoes just can't stand it anymore. So it's really important to bear in mind these eight worldly winds. Whirl us around and whirl us off our feet. And then we feel overwhelmed again by life. And we need to see a therapist, and we need to have sauna every day, all day, or, you know, take some medication. And so this cultivation of that, what's that word?
Tuliviri.
This tuliviri, this cultivation of this discernment, I think is probably quite particular to each person. How you cultivate this kind of discerning tuliviri that remembers to not get sucked in, to not get pulled into these things, to be able to step back, but not in a way that we're pushing, you know, we're making distance and becoming a very cold person, not in a way of indifference, but in a way of just, what am I doing here? Where does it feel like this movement is taking me? When we feel this movement, where we're getting pulled into something. Having said this, it's feels like it's still very important to enjoy the beauty of nature. So that I know that some people practice, like some very aesthetic monks, they practice in that way of beautiful sunset, close my eyes, you know? Birdsong, you know? And they really exaggerate it when it comes to women. Oh my God, women, the temptress, sensuality. Oh my God, there's a person lying on the floor near me. Oh my God, my God, my God. They don't say my God though. Do you know what I mean? That kind of exaggeration around the senses, around what's coming in through the senses, through our sensual world, where they speak about guarding. We must guard the doors of the senses. Like, guard. Or something like that, you know? And that I find to be missing the point, actually. It misses the point. We need to have an openness with the senses. We need to be able to drink in those beautiful sunsets and drink in the beauty of the world, to be reverent to this beautiful planet that we're on. We need to enjoy it and celebrate this planet, to build a bit more energy to respect it, no? Before it's too late. Because as he says in the poem, you know, we need to be reverent. If this species wants to stay on this planet, and it's true, we're not doing very well at that. And it might be too late, but celebrating and connecting with that beauty, to the beauty in here, goes a long way, goes a hell of a long way. And there's a poem by Rumi, or just a phrase actually, that says this well. But first I just want to say a last thing, and that is, so there is this like tuli viri, practicing our discernment to build some balance in regard to the eight worldly winds, these human tendencies that we have to get ourselves into trouble, to get very stressed out. So there is bearing that in mind, and this connection with the beauty, this connection with our own goodness, our own good hearts, our own beauty hearts. And so there's this phrase from a mystical poet called Rumi, and it's "Kiss the joy as it flies." So it's knowing that it's impermanent, knowing that the beauty will not stay, knowing that the pleasant experience is not going to last forever, or the pleasant relationship or whatever. We can still live it. We can still enjoy it, but we're not holding on to it like this. We're not clinging to it like glue, you know? And we're not pushing away the rest of the experiences. And what I found so lovely here is there are no advertisements. There's no publicity telling us that we're missing something and that we should get, you know, some beautiful perfume or some beautiful chocolate. Or so that craving thing is not happening. We're being teased with that, with the consumerist world. There's just this. And kiss the joy as it flies.